Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System. Here, as always, with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News. And Rudy, the housing market in the Dallas area is booming. Recent reports predict continued growth of more than 20% over the next year. How high can home prices soar, and will the bubble eventually burst? What about commercial real estate? What will the long-term impact of the coronavirus pandemic mean? Local real estate executive Rogers Healy joins us to explore these questions and more as we dive into DFW real estate. Rogers, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rogers. We really appreciate it. It's sort of fitting. The last show that Paul and I did was on homelessness and the struggles that the region has with homelessness. But, of course, there's another side to this story, and that is the home prices, home values. The rush to purchase homes, according to our reporting here in the morning news, home sales might have dipped a little bit in August for the year, but they are up 19% in prices year over year. So what we're really interested in digging in with you on here is, what is going on with this housing market? What is happening that is driving these prices, and what should people expect looking into the future?
Sure. So let me, first of all, I'll answer your first kind of question first with the dip in August. And that's something that we've seen kind of every year, no matter what, except for last year, where last year our spring market started. Spring normally is the busiest season of the year for residential. And our spring market didn't start last year until like May, right? So we didn't really have a traditional real estate season or a real estate year. But this past year, things were, you know, as normal. They were way more normal than they were in 2020. And if you just think about the black and white logic of it, a big majority of home buyers are people that probably have a family that move because of school. And if you think about summertime, my wife and I don't have kids yet, but I'm sure when we do, end of July is probably going to be the last stretch to go and take a vacation, which means people are probably not going to go and try to transact on a property to close in 30 to 45 days, which would be August. So August normally is a month of kind of a slowdown. And then what happens is if you follow the seasons and the trends and you kind of play to it, what happens is school starts early September, two-week groove, and all of a sudden by the end of September, there's another push. So we've kind of seen this for a long time. And I think that as far as the other question, you know, it's basic supply and demand. And what we saw last year is we had almost 400 people move into Dallas proper every single day. A lot of those people from California, from the East Coast, where what was 250 here was 450 or 850 where they're coming from. So, you know, deals were actually there to be had. So, you know, I don't feel like we're in a housing bubble. I don't feel like we're in a real estate crisis here. I do think that it's going to kind of start to slow down a little bit just because of supply and demand and with, you know, production getting caught up. But yeah, I mean, it's not crazy what's happening. And I think that people that waited till now to get a deal, hopefully a year from now, that will be a deal looking back. And I think that's the mindset people need to take moving forward here in a city that's changing every single day.
That addresses, I think, a critical question that I was going to get into, because I did a fair amount of reporting on the housing crisis or the housing bubble of the, you know, late aughts and the enormous economic impact that had, really bringing the economy almost to its knees. And, you know, I remember going out to do some reporting in Las Vegas, and I would meet, you know, blackjack dealers who owned three houses and things like that. And I think people now are wondering, okay, are we going through this same kind of cycle of inflated prices, which are based on nothing? But it doesn't sound like the economics really are pointing to that.
You're talking about in Dallas specific?
Well, in Dallas specific, but if you want to address the broader country, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, so to kind of play off your Vegas analogy, I remember when The Big Short came out.
Right,
there's two movies that changed my life, The Big Short and Moneyball. And when The Big Short came out, I kind of lived from the experience of, you know, I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and I traveled to places like Vegas, Miami, Scottsdale, and I was just like, where are these people coming from? And then you go back 2 years later and, you know, all the cranes are just sitting in the sky hanging out because there's not a buyer for $1,000 a square foot place in Miami. So I think that kind of obviously is always going to be interesting to anybody, where is this money coming from? But something that we have to consider is that the mortgage crisis from 10 or 12 years ago was because people were getting qualified that shouldn't have gotten qualified. So when you get your hand burned, you know, from the skillet, you don't want to go put it on again. So these people that are buying now, maybe were just people that didn't need to move, but they saw a deal out there. So I think that has definitely changed. But, you know, I don't think we're headed towards another one of these real estate recessions where back in the day it was real estate's fault. Right now it's not, you know. And I think, again, especially with residential, if we learned anything last year, we all need more space. And Dallas is a unique city in the sense that you don't have to live in a high-rise to be close to the mix, right? But the high-rise market also has done well because people cashed out of their single-family homes that didn't need the space. So, you know, we're kind of protected on all sides of it.
Hey, question about just the Dallas area as a whole. So, you know, Dallas proper, and then we know, you know, growth up north in Collin County is well-documented. Where are the hottest spots for residential real estate growth during this boom?
It's all relative, you know. And again, I think that we saw trends shift pretty significantly, especially over the course of like 8 or 9 months, where the mindset of a 25-year-old millennial that wanted to live close to Uptown or Oaklawn or downtown all of a sudden maybe focused on things that were more important. Maybe they want to start a family sooner. Maybe they want to live in the suburbs. Maybe they want, you know, an easier lifestyle, where, you know, we've seen pockets like Mansfield, right, and the Colony, and places where they're actually going and developing stuff to target not the typical, you know, buyer or renter. So, you know, I think that school districts will always take precedent over just about everything. And normally with a good school district, you have, you know, you've got good police and firepower as well. So Southlake, Park Cities, Colleyville, all those are always going to do well, but so is Lake Highlands, right? And I think we've seen these little mini suburbs and these little mini pockets, even south of 635, go up 30 to 40% over the course of 18 months just because people want Leave It to Beaver, you know, because that's what, you know, life is all about. And I think if anything we learned last year, it was about perspective. And when you're in the rat race of Dallas, and it doesn't matter how great you are, you're never the greatest, you kind of want to go and take a step back and breathe.
Right.
So the suburbs, you know, have won, but so is the urban core.
What about, are there any bargains to be had out there? Rudy mentioned that we had a show on homelessness, and one of the factors we talked about was people being priced out of being able to purchase a home. So are there bargains out there that you recommend as far as areas go?
Sure. You know, and I learned early on that the definition of a good deal is a deal that makes you feel good. And it's something I got used to saying last year and earlier this year, where truly, it's not that much fun to be a buyer or a realtor when you're going to show a home for $300,000, where historically it'd be on the market for a month, and you have, you know, 3 to 5% of wiggle room, and you go to show it, and it's like waiting in line for the new iPhone, where there's a waiting list. I mean, that's not normal, but it's probably because people still wanted to be where they thought they were going to be for the last 4 or 5 years. And if you realistically look at statistics of real estate, especially residential, where you're not locked into something other than a mortgage, you're probably not going to live there more than 3 to 5 years, right? And then you start looking at the statistics deeper, where normally it's 1,000 square foot for every child. You know, if it's your first home with your spouse or your partner, you might not need 5,000 square feet, right? And I think that started to kind of change the trends in general, where people could get a deal. But I think that the past 17, 18 months, a deal is a deal that you want, right? And I don't think people are used to that here. Where you saw sellers are more educated than ever before because of realtors and also because of the news, that they were actually pricing their homes competitively. Mm-hmm. Some of them even so they would price it under value, knowing that they'd get, it was like a cattle auction, you know? So there's deals to be had, but the thing that I've seen now is people that had homes over maybe 6 or 7,000 square feet that thought they could double their money in 2 or 3 years, that have committed to something else, maybe there's a way to get a deal on something like that. But, you know, it's still all relative. And eventually the question is, like, where are these people going to keep going? You know, like, if you sell your house, maybe you can buy. But some of these people on the flip side that maybe are in a generational home, they've been there for 40 or 50 years, might not be able to pay their property taxes because their home value has gone up so much and they're locked into $800 a year and it goes to $3,000 a year. I think that's going to be a problem. But again, you know, it kind of just takes care of itself. And the gentrification effect in DFW is moving all four directions, which you've never seen in real estate anywhere.
That's really interesting. Help put Dallas in kind of perspective. I mean, how hot are we relative to everybody else? I mean, are we in the middle of the pack? Are we way ahead?
I don't want to use the term hot. I think it's extremely safe.
Okay.
And I think the thing about Dallas, especially if you're from here, it always was a hard sell. right? Like, why would you come visit Dallas other than sports and a concert and good food, good booze? I mean, it's a city that people like to be home at. And I think once you kind of get past that, if you think about the most volatile markets, it's normally Vegas, Arizona, Miami, Los Angeles, these cities, Chicago, that are tourist cities, right? And that means there's probably a lot of transition there where someone goes to D.C., they live there for 2 to 3 years, and they peace out. They move to L.A., it doesn't work for them, they leave, right? They want to, it's like, and then there's Dallas, where yeah. Dallas is right in the middle of the country. It's a relatively affordable city, and I think when people kind of just press either not the give up button, or it's more like the grow up button, this place becomes home. Yeah. And I think because of that, we have stability now for the next 30 or 40 years.
What about within our state compared to Austin, Houston, San Antonio, those types of markets?
I think Dallas is a melting pot, and I think people don't realize it, especially the ones that have been here their whole lives. Dallas has, it's got culture, and it's got an edge, and Dallas to me is more like a New York City or a London versus a Houston or an Austin. And I think the beauty of Dallas is you could be at an airport in Chicago and see someone and be like, I don't know if they look like a L.A. person or Chicago. It's like Dallas doesn't have an identity in a really healthy way. And I think because of that, people like the fact that this isn't just a straight-up Texas town. And if they need that, they can go to Fort Worth, right? Because it's obviously got some more cliches to it. So, yeah, I think that the intentionality that we've seen from our city council and our mayors and our leaders has really led to something really, really special that most people don't even know that we have.
No, I really appreciate you saying that, because I think it does touch on a lot of what I find appealing about Dallas as I travel around the country, and that is, it is hard to find a place that A, is, you know, relatively affordable, B, has a lot of economic opportunity, and C, where you can just kind of get into the mix pretty quickly as a person and not feel like you have to adopt whatever the sort of defining culture of the city is. And, and I don't want to name names, Austin, but there are places where it's not affordable, opportunity is a little trickier, and there is a kind of definition to who you need to be. That said, I wonder how you hang on to that if you're seeing 19% year-over-year increases in prices.
Well, I may I respond to
that? Yeah, that's the invitation.
We've got the bandwidth.
Okay, great.
Like, and again, it just goes back from an infrastructural standpoint. Dallas literally can grow all four directions. Austin runs north and south, right? And if you want an affordable house in Austin, you need to go closer to the hill, to New Braunfels, right? Here, you can literally go west. You can now go south. You can go east. Everyone's been going north, which is no longer super affordable. But if we're going to continue growing, and by the time we have grandchildren, DFW will go to Waco and to Tyler, Texas. So again, you know, you're losing a little bit of the convenience factor, right? Especially if people are still working downtown, they're working in uptown. You know, if you go 20 miles away, that's a hike. But again, it's all relative. And I think that that's what's unique about our city, is that it's like, it's Sim City in real life. Right? Manhattan, you're on an island. You literally can't build anymore. Los Angeles, you can kind of keep doing it, but it's going to be miserable. Dallas has potential to be the biggest city in the country, and it's not going to be a mess.
An interesting thing you stated earlier that I wanted to ask, because I think it's relatable to a lot of people. You talked about people pricing their homes lower to get, you know, sort of a bidding war. Yeah. And I've also seen people personally, just in my own relationships, begin to price things higher. Rudy and I used to be neighbors, and in the neighborhood in Northwest Dallas where I used to live and Rudy still lives, there's been a boom, but now you've seen people listing their houses for, to me, a little bit of a ridiculous price, and they're not selling as quickly. So from a strategy standpoint, when someone's selling their home, what's your guidance?
I mean, we work for them, right? And I think that, you know, as a kid, I was really into collecting baseball cards, and I would go and maybe pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card out of it, and let's say it was worth $100. And my dad would tell me it's actually worth what someone's willing to pay, right? So I think on paper, it's really good for the ego and for the soul, but the irony is most sellers are buyers, right? So when you want to go overprice your house and then you want to get a deal buying, it's just that crossroads of logic and lunacy. And so, you know, maybe it makes the buyer feel good right now that they're getting, you know, 2 to 3% off of a list price, but again, there's factors that we don't really have much control over right now. And I think that's a rarity to be a seasoned, you know, expert in this field. you have people that, you know, watch the news or read the paper or get on a real estate app like Zillow or whatever, and they think their house is worth more than it is, right? But then there's also, for the first time ever, those unicorn situations where someone's like, oh my gosh, I love your street name and your backyard has a wind chime and it's perfect. We'll pay it's, but we've seen that happen.
Yeah.
And then when that happens, that sets the comps to a higher number. Right, because it sells for a price per square foot you haven't seen, and all of a sudden everyone now wants to chase that price per square foot. So we've seen it happen, but I think for the first time ever, our advice is just that, you know. And I think for the first time ever too, people will still go list the property because you just never know.
Well, I think you're spot on a lot of things here, and of course housing economies, like all economies, are created of extremely complex factors that all come together. But the reality is, and you can correct me on this, we're seeing more people put more cash on the line, more real money, maybe getting out of equities, getting into their home.
Yeah.
And so the prices that I think we're seeing now are harder and more resilient than a lot of people maybe hope they will be who are buyers at this point in time. And whatever inflationary pressures there might be in the broader economy or supply chain issues there might be, which play a factor, I tend to think that Rogers is exactly right, that this is not any kind of bubble, and that you probably are going to pay more for your house in Dallas, Texas, going forward. And I mean, is that a fair summary of where you're going?
Yeah. And then on top of that too, you talk about taking money out of the market, and you know, people want a tangible investment. And I think that the conversation that still is continued to be had is, when is the stock market going to potentially level off? And if you can take cash out and not rely on, I don't do stocks because I don't know the people that are running the companies, right? And I want to be able to trust where my money is at. And I think people are kind of taking that approach, especially the ones that made a lot of money. And I think that there's so much stuff behind the scenes now with you know, cryptocurrency and with the stock market, that eventually someone's going to take a step back and be like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, what? Like, it doesn't make sense. So real estate, right? To where eventually real estate is gold, right? Even if it dips, it's always going to come back, especially in a place like Dallas. So I think people like that. I also think people, from an investment standpoint, love the short-term rental aspect and being little, like, kind of hotel tycoons. And that's happening, you know, in bulk as well. So, yeah, I think when people think of it that way, it's a logical time to purchase a home. And I don't think emotions are really dictating, you know, the outcome anymore.
How significant a role has low mortgage rates played in this?
It's been great, right? But again, people are going to find a way to go and do it. And I think that when you think about an interest rate under 3%, historically that's an all-time low, but historically a 6% interest rate is still really, really low. So I think lifestyle changes are bound to happen, right? It's like you can't go and live this extravagant life in Dallas and spend all your money and then still go have a down payment for a home. You have to make modifications. And we're in the city of $30,000 millionaires. Right. So I think that'll be interesting to see what kind of trends happen outside of the world of real estate, but I'm sure it's all part of it. So, yeah, I think interest rates have been a massive, massive help.
Well, I definitely want to get into commercial real estate here, but yep. I want to ask one more question about the housing market that gets into this affordability matter. And I think it's really crucial that we figure out a way within our society, within our economy, to make sure that people who need housing get quality housing that they can build equity in. I just tend to think that that is absolutely central to the American project.
Same.
One thing that we are seeing, Rogers, and I'm sort of interested in your take on this, is speaking of the market, speaking of hedge funds, speaking of kind of investing that isn't always so easy to sort out, we are seeing a lot of Wall Street firms, heavy capitalized firms, purchase single-family homes and then get into this short-term rental or long-term rental market. Are you seeing that? Are you seeing it have any kind of effect on the local market?
Yeah, big time. You know, but I think that buying it for short-term rentals is probably not as wise as buying it just as a long-term investment, because, you know, like New Orleans is a good case study. The French Quarter got murdered by people. The French Quarter hotels got murdered by people doing short-term rentals. And then they put a ban on it, right? So I do think that there's a little bit, it's more risky. It's riskier purchasing properties with the intention for an Airbnb or short-term a VRBO because literally a neighborhood association or a new deed restriction could be put in place to go and ban it. But still, you own the dirt. And I think people appreciate that. And I think overpaying now is a good deal later on down the road. And the same thing for commercial. But we're seeing prices now where Dallas, especially back, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, we were in the same indexes as blue-collar cities for appreciation, right? Which gave people like a feel-good, but we were never in that Miami, Vegas, LA, you know, New York City roller coaster. And we're still not. And I think people appreciate that because, again, just the basic economics of supply and demand are here to stay. So, yeah, again, overpaying right now, you still win the deal. And to, on the commercial side, to buy at a 3 or 4 cap, you still are making 3 or 4% on your money. Yeah. Where a decade ago, you get it at an 8 cap. Great. But it's all relative. And if rental rates continue to increase, a 3 or 4 cap a year from now could be a 4 cap, maybe a 5. And then all of a sudden, you look like a genius.
Well, I know we wanted to jump into commercial a little bit. Maybe we do that through the perspective of coronavirus. And it's interesting you mentioned the Airbnb idea. And I think the habits of people, especially early in the pandemic, were a little bit unusual because we'd never had this freedom to kind of be wherever we could be, right? I was working remotely every day. All of a sudden, my wife and I thought it was a good idea to start looking at places in Durango that we could turn into an Airbnb because we had this new flexibility, right? So the impact of coronavirus, both residential and then let's talk commercial because that's a different animal. Just as a whole, what are your perspectives on the pandemic, early pandemic, where we are now, long-term effects?
So I took a lot of deep dives into all this stuff outside of the world of real estate, and I'm very pro caution, very pro vaccine, and pro safety, and I'm also a business owner, which means I have to be pro mitigating risk, right? Which means we need space. So I think that the trends are here to stay, and I think in a city like Dallas too, where not everybody's vaccinated, unfortunately, or you know whatever the case may be. This is not going to just all of a sudden have somebody snap their fingers and it's going to be back to normal. I think this is normal. And on top of that, like what you're saying with you and your wife, people had time last year to go educate themselves on things that normally they would do, you know, on an elevator, you know. And I think that when you have that, you do have people that are, you know, relatively dangerous with going and doing things that are outside their comfort zone because the trends have changed. So, you know, I think that this is not necessarily the new normal anymore because I do think people that have worked from home are longing for companionship and a different kind of accountability. And I don't know how the, you know, in between of, you know, the hybrid is going to work, but I think people are willing to try it out. Even myself, like I'm 41, I've done real estate for 21 years, and I never really missed a day in my office for 19 and a half years. And I'm just programmed that way. And I was forced to be productive from home, right? And it proved that we can survive and thrive. And I think that that's just kind of the way it is right now. But I do think that people still want to be in an office environment. And, you know, I think that'll be an interesting case study moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you say that, Rogers, because I kind of went through a roller coaster of my own from at the beginning of the pandemic thinking this is going to be great, we're all going to work from home, it's going to change our culture, we won't have to maybe necessarily invest as much in our infrastructure because we won't have to get to and fro and do the commute.
Yeah.
And now kind of on what hopefully is the back end of the pandemic, God willing, as a manager and also as someone who is managed and who really loves working in a team, I have seen more and more the drawbacks. Yeah. Of being alone at home and Zooming and all that sort of stuff. I don't know how it's going to shake out, really. I like the hybrid thinking, and I hope that maybe some of this stays, but I don't know what culturally is going to be different or how it will affect the real estate business. We have a lot of commercial property, it seems, in Dallas that needs a demand to fill it. So I just don't see where this is going. Give us a crystal ball.
Yeah, I'm old school thinking, and I think that you could go and read a book like The 4-Day Work Week and be like, that's not realistic, right? And then you take a step back too, where I have these moments, I'm like, I'm working 5 days to really enjoy one day with my wife, right? Where like Sunday you're kind of relaxing, getting prepped for Monday, and then Friday you're tired. It's like, you know, is that the secret of life? Probably not. But I think people still long for collaboration. And again, I think the thing that last year that I missed the most was dimension. And I think, you know, being with my wife and our dogs was great, but just being able to have the ability to go interact with someone and bounce an idea off and actually read their body language versus just, you know, wonder if they have pants on a computer screen, people miss that. And I think in any job, you have to have creativity, no matter what you're doing. And I think you also have to have that sense of camaraderie, whether, you know, misery loves company or, you know, iron sharpens iron. People need that, right? But I think we're going to figure that out over the course of time, but I don't think that the commercial market is going to get crucified.
Well, as we wrap up our conversation here, just thinking of your company, you've mentioned you've been in the real estate market here for a few decades. What do you see as the best opportunity moving ahead for you and your company, and taking advantage of the opportunities that are here, to work with clients?
Yeah, just listen to logic, right? And I think everybody can be a leader in their own right, but, you know, we have had the wheel kind of reinvented, and I think that take that approach to whatever it is you're doing and realize the ones historically that sit on the fence the longest are the ones that get the biggest splinters. And I think that with this, if you take a different approach to something and you realize real estate is a massive investment, right? But it should be an investment in your happiness as well. And I think that's the root of what we do at the end of the day. But I think people get into this mindset that they're going to go and triple their money, which they might. But even if you lose a little bit of money, that's okay, because it's probably less expensive than renting. So I think that's just the approach. And I think with commercial as well, what I was telling you before we started, I thought we would eventually downsize, but we've taken significantly more space to make it safer.
Right.
Right. So as a business owner, we have to be covered to where COVID insurance doesn't exist. So how do I go and mitigate risk? More space, right? Which means I have to go and hire a stronger workforce. And, you know, it just right when you think you figured it out, life throws you a curveball, which means you got to go and actually think. And I think that the right people appreciate the fact that it's not just handed to them.
Well, we appreciate the insights today, Roger Seeley.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
My
and to our listeners,
so much.
Thank you for checking out the podcast. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. We'll talk to you soon. The Deep Side of Dallas is presented by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. Our show is produced by Aiden Barrett.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please support the local journalism behind it. Go to join.dallasnews.com and select a membership that works for you. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.